Linda Springer of Ernst & Young is my guest, talking about her top three for 2013. And I did notice, Linda, that two of these are in the area of expertise that you took advantage of at the Office of Personnel Management, and one of them in the area of expertise that you took advantage of at the Office of Management and Budget. We'll start with the human capital stuff. And you write about having a workforce ready to meet future challenges, especially in the environment we're in right now. That strikes me as particularly delicate for agencies to try to navigate.
Well, it is, but I think that putting aside some of the issues related to budget and pay and things like that, there is still a focus on delivery of services, citizen-centric government, use of social media, and other ways of delivering services and performing duties that really require a workforce that is positioned and suited and in an environment that is consistent with that type of service delivery. So that's really the challenge that I've identified as the first one here. We're competing for talent for government agencies that is also being attracted and sought for private sector positions, and the federal government needs to keep pace with the type of 21st century workforce model that will really be attractive to these individuals.
The idea of delivering services seems to be something that I think agencies are focusing on a lot more over the last year or two, especially. For a long time, you got a vibe most of the time that agencies were doing business for the sake of doing business and maybe forgot about the customer service part of it. I probably heard the word customer more often in the last year than in the, all the other years combined that I've been covering the federal government.
I'm not surprised to hear that. There are many agencies that do interact directly with our citizens. You think about the VA, Social Security, IRS are some obvious ones, but there are other ones that maybe are not as foremost in our minds, even just as directly as the interaction with a Park Service official when you go to Yellowstone or some other great park or national monument that we have. You know, there are all kinds of interactions that we have. They may be a step removed, or they may be very directly. They may be facilitated by technology as well as the, you know, human touch. But I think that more and more speed of service requirements and other things are going to require a workforce that does have that 21st century model in mind. And technology is part of this, but I think also being aware that people will want to work in various career patterns. They might want to get up in the middle of the night and do some sort of work very remotely on a part-time basis, and not just the types of careers that we traditionally think go with those models, but others as well. So I do think it's a mindset as well as creating an atmosphere and using technology.
The second item on your list, Linda, is sizing the workforce the right way. This is an issue that you and I have talked about on a number of occasions before. But you're right, much of the discussion about the size of the federal workforce is focused on numbers. A more insightful and effective approach to determining an appropriate workforce size begins with understanding the tasks that need to be performed. And this goes back to, again, something you and I have discussed before, which is agencies getting a handle on all the things that they're expected to do, prioritizing the things that are important in a time of budget crunches, and then determining who they need and the skills that they need to be able to execute that mission. Am I on track with what you're thinking about there?
Well, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think you really do have a grasp of that, Francis, and I'm sure from your interactions with others, both in and, you know, directly working with the federal workforce, that you've been able to get an appreciation for that that maybe some others that put these approaches forward don't have. I know that working with former OPM officials, for example, Janice LaChance, a former director from the Clinton administration, and I both really, I think, see that this is an important thing for us to be focused on when we deal with dealing with these budget issues, dealing with having the right number of people so that you enable their success when they take on a mission. Doing these types of programs on the cheap really is not going to be good for anyone, the customer, the workforce, morale, any of those things. So we really need to use an approach that says, what is it that we want to do, staff it appropriately, and if we can't afford everything, not to do it on the cheap or have half the amount of staff needed and ultimately create a challenging situation. But I think getting this message across still needs some work, because this approach still has some appeal, unfortunately, and I think that it would have some very significant consequences that would be hurtful.
Now, when I talk to my management and government reorganization experts, they talk about the difference between structural reorganization and functional reorganization. You know, functional reorganization meaning the boxes still stay in the same places on the org charts at the various agencies, but there is interaction with the agencies across those silos to try to get more done. What's the impact of that kind of reorganization potentially on sizing the workforce the right way?
That is something that I think could be a helpful approach. Certainly there are common tasks, common skill sets that you find across components of agencies and across from one agency to another, so that there may be some opportunity to create partnerships, if you will, at those levels where the not only do you get the synergies and the efficiencies of having a combined workforce, a unified workforce, if you will, that is approaching those issues and those services and you know their roles, but I think also it may surface some redundancies that could be eliminated, right? You know, by virtue of the indirect way that you come to those. So that is, I think, something that bears looking as well. You know, if you do have the same service and the same skill set being used in multiple places, it could be that there's extra capacity that could be gained by that combination.
Linda Springer of Ernst & Young talking about her top three for 2013. The third item on your list is in the financial management category, and you call it doing more to optimize control environments. And I have to confess, as I read this, I thought this might be a little more green eye shady than I'm used to dealing with.
Put it into some practical terms. When people handle money, they need to know that along the way that there are the right checks and balances to make sure that the money is ending up in the right place, is being handled properly, accounted for properly. And those checkpoints are called controls. Sometimes they relate to more than one person having access, or only the right people having access, or different authorities that people have to, so that only the right people with the right skill sets and authorities have access. It might relate to some sort of technology in a system. There are various things, but ultimately, I won't point them out by name, but there have been instances in the past years where different things happened and funds were used for events and other types of things that really were not in the best interest of the agency or the taxpayers. Having those controls in place, and not just controls for the sake of controls, but a risk-based approach to controls, will mean that the right level of those checkpoints will be there relative to the risk that there is that something could happen, you know, whether it's a fraud, whether it's just an inefficiency or some inaccuracy, not intentional. But the government has been very good about making sure the control environment, the whole scope of those types of checks, is working effectively, but not as much attention has been paid to the efficiency of those. So you can have an over-controlled environment, which is almost as bad, where there's so much time spent on that that it's out of balance with the amount of risk. For example, a control might have been put in place for a process that's been superseded by a more modern process, and that one doesn't even exist anymore, but someone is having to spend time looking at something or doing some sort of review or dealing with a checkpoint that's irrelevant. So efficiency now is important as well as effectiveness. And by the way, those controls have a certain cost with them. It might be related to someone's time. It might actually be an expense of maintaining a system checkpoint. So the reality is that efficiency in that control environment related to making it risk-based is something that we think more and more agencies, similar to the private sector, will be undertaking.